Hello there. You're very welcome to Burning Books. My name is Ruth McKee. I'm the editor of Books Ireland, and joining me today is author Laura McFay. Laura's debut novel, Two Roads, was published by John Murray Press in 2017, and her latest book, Lenny, is a magical tale of family, loss, and the redemptive power of the imagination, and is published by New Island. Laura, I'd love to start at the beginning with you, back to when you were a little girl, and what brought you to reading, or if you were a big reader as a child, and maybe if you remember a particular book that kind of opened the door to reading.
I was a big reader as a child. We had a house full of books. My mother was an English teacher, so we had lots of Irish fiction, lots of poetry. We also had a lot of international fiction in the house, and I was always encouraged very much to read from an early age. So I had a real love of books, and I suppose I was one of those kids that was always sitting up late at night reading. And I had lots of favourites, but probably the book that I love the best and that I still love all these years later is A Necklace of Raindrops and Other Stories, which is a collection of stories by Joan Aitken. And it's just the most beautiful book, with gorgeous, gorgeous illustrations. And the writing is so strong and simple and clear, but at the same time, it's full of lots of magic and wisdom, and just is incredibly adventurous. Which I think is something that the playful nature within it, which is beautiful in writing. So those are stories that I loved as a child and that I've read to my own daughter subsequently.
Oh, that's beautiful. So it's kind of a legacy, really. It's carrying on. Mm-hmm. And do you find in those stories, was there, you know, you say magic and wisdom, but was there the malevolence of some of like the older fairy tales, you know, like the Brothers Grimm or Hans Christian Andersen, or is it a different style of stories? I'm not familiar with the book at all.
So some of the kinds of stories that they had, I mean, the story of the title, The Necklace of Raindrops, it was about a little girl called Laura, and she has this magical necklace of raindrops that her godfather, the North Wind, brings her one each birthday until it gets lost. And then, you know, a whole series of events ensue. Other stories in the collection, there was a tiger that runs faster than the wind. There was a huge floating pie that had a piece of the sky in it. So they're kind of whimsical. And she would start from something recognizable and then take it into more of a kind of magic realism space, really. So it's quite an optimistic kind of storytelling. There's a little bit of darkness, but no, not like the,
okay,
the Brothers Grimm.
And would you say any of that? You say magic realism, I immediately think of writers like Jan Carson now, who, you know, whose novels would be informed a lot by that. Would any of that have kind of seeped into your own writing, even when you were younger and you started writing, or even in a subliminal way, do you think? Or
No, I think definitely that's a part of how I like to write. And when I was sort of later on, I studied language and literature at university, and I studied a lot of Spanish literature, a lot of Latin American writers in particular. And one of my absolute favorites was Gabriel García Márquez, and obviously, you know, his classic 100 Years of Solitude. So for me, that, like A Necklace of Raindrops, really, yes, it's this sense of, you take something familiar and you transform it. And it has a logic and a sense within the truth of the story. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the thing that's really beautiful, that you can travel a story in different directions.
You mentioned 100 Years of Solitude there. And I remember, for me, that was a very pivotal book back in my 20s. I named my cat Remedios the Beauty, Meme. Which is probably dooming her in some way. But And I know here from my notes that you reread, and that's one of the books that you return to, Marqueth, but also other writers too that write in different language. But like you've got Neruda here. So do you read these books in the original or in translation, or how do you approach writers like that?
No, I read in the original. I mean, obviously not for everything, but, you know, I've read a lot of Tolstoy over the years. I don't read that in the original. That's in translation. But anything that's in French or Spanish, increasingly Italian, Catalan, Portuguese, I would read in the original. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes I'll also have a translation to hand, and I did study translation as well. So I find the art of translation really, really interesting. It's very particular to try and take, obviously, not just the words that an author has written, but it's more the spirit of
yes.
the writing and the things that aren't on the page, you know, the things that aren't spoken. So being able to take that and to translate it from one language to another and still have stylistic coherence, I think, is fascinating.
It's fascinating, and also sometimes you wonder in what way it's even possible with something like poetry, with something like Neruda, how on earth to translate the spirit of that poetry into English seems almost unfathomable. But would you read then both versions? Would you read in English and in the original and get something different? Or
I mean, sometimes but I think usually I'll read it in the original language, because I think it's just I prefer to do that.
Yeah. One of the books that you mentioned here about books that you reread or that you return to that are might be a touchstone for you, one of the books here is The Little Prince.
And I just
wanted to ask you about that. What is it about The Little Prince that captures you?
Well, it's all the writing of Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, actually. I mean, he would be one of my favourite all-time writers. And in fact, with Lenny, with the new book, I knew that I very much wanted to have a conversation with Saint-Exupéry's writing within the novel. And The Little Prince features within the novel of Lenny. It's a book that Lenny, who's a little 10-year-old boy, it accompanies him on his journey throughout the story. And I mean, there's so many things to love in Saint-Exupéry's writing, and not just, as I said, The Little Prince, but other things that he's written, Flight to Arras or Wind, Sand and Stars, Southern Mail. Just really remarkable, I think, for the humanity of his writing and kind of the philosophical nature of it, the clarity. And The Little Prince, it's deceptively simple, and yet it's so, so rich. And it's the sort of book that you can come back to time and time again, and you're always going to find something new within it.
Yes.
It's a real joy and a favourite for me.
You open the novel with a quote from The Little Prince. I'm just going to read it for our listeners because it's kind of pertinent to what I want to ask you next. But... And now here is my secret, a very simple secret. It is only with the heart one can see rightly. What is essential is invisible to the eye. That's just a gorgeous way to open, Lenny. And it kind of spoke to something else you mentioned when I was asking you about a book that taught you something important or opened your eyes. And I read that quote at the start of Lenny and I thought, can you tell me about this book that was a bit revelatory to you in some way?
So the book that I find really kind of opened up my thinking in a lot of ways was Ways of Seeing by John Berger. And it's an interesting book because it's actually full of lots of pictures, more so than words. And it was really to accompany a television series that there was in the 1970s. And he opened up quite a new way of looking at art and exploring art and our relationship to art. And I've, as much as I have a love of literature and books, I've also had a long love with painting and the visual arts. And at university, a lot of the things that I studied had that aspect and element to them. And for me, you know, John Berger, he says, we never look at just one thing. We're always looking at the relation between things and ourselves. And I think that's just fabulous. I mean, it really, once we start to look at the world in that way, it just opens up, I think, so much in terms of empathy, compassion, connection, you know, self-awareness. It's, it was really, really a revelation.
That idea of nothing is separate, that
exactly
deep sense of, you know, or, you know, you're looking at the thing, it is a representation of the thing, and the representation of the thing is also becomes another conceptual idea. It's quite beautiful and very human. But yeah, I mean, I agree with you about that. And the documentary as well, which for its time was utterly transformative, really, wasn't it? You know, for people who would go into like a museum or a gallery and feel sort of overwhelmed and something that what he said something about, yeah, an assault on thoughtless reverence.
Yes.
You know, that the, yeah, had that, and just didn't he hack a Botticelli with a knife at one point in the documentary, just to kind of just, yeah,
it's breaking down those barriers really around, you know, what is art and how you connect to art and how you understand it. And you know, the same thing is obviously very true of reading and our relationship to books. There's the book that the author writes, which is one thing, and then there's the multitude of books that, you know, each reader, it's a different reading,
yes,
of the book, bringing a whole different set of experiences and emotions.
And it's no longer yours, really. It's no longer your book. Once it's gone out there, it's not. It's, you know,
once it's gone, it's done.
it's up. I think I saw Colin Barrett tweeting recently about his new collection, and he was like, you know, people are asking me, you know, what it is about. You know, oh my god. You know, in some senses, that's your job, guys, now that you're reading it. But yeah, it was really. Ali Smith also said Ways of Seeing was formative in her work as well, you know, and you can see there is such a kind of kinship between visual arts and a certain form of writing, I think, that, you know, and would you say that your writing is sort of visual, is a very sort of general word, but you know what I mean, kind of yeah, like that kind of visual, metaphorical, kind of deeper sense, would you say that's in your writing?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I see it. You know, I write in a very intuitive way. I might know what the start is, what the ending is, or I might think I know what the ending is going to be. I don't really want to know what's in the middle. I want to be surprised and discover that as I go. So I do tend to see the story early on very quickly. And one of the things that I do when I'm researching and pulling together all the different sort of sparks and ideas for writing, I put together a visual board of images, and I will go back to that time and time again in the writing, and it just helps center the story for me.
Yeah, kind of brings you back to that deep sort of emotional, not even emotional, but yeah, aesthetic kind of connection to the idea rather than the kind of story. Yeah, I can totally see that. So you're a kind of organic finding your way kind of author, as opposed to having everything mapped out or planned out.
Yeah, I've tried the planning and mapping. I gave it a go, and it really wasn't for me. It was kind of dead on arrival.
Yeah.
I think writing needs to be alive. It needs to have spirit and heart and emotion. And if it doesn't, if I write something and I'm not moved in the writing of whatever that is, Yeah. It doesn't make me laugh, if it doesn't make me sad, if I can't connect to it, then I know a reader is not going to be able to connect to it either. So
yeah, it's that old line, no tears in the reader, nor no tears. Oh, it's the other way around. I'm doing a George Bush. No tears in the writer, no tears in the reader. Fool me once. I should stop trying to quote things. But back to what you're reading and what you're nourishing yourself with now. I see from my notes that I was quite pleased to see this. Niccolò Ammaniti, you're reading, is it Non ho paura you're reading at the minute? Or is it?
Non ho paura, yeah.
Yeah, I'm not scared. There was a great film of that, wasn't there?
I haven't seen the film, just with the book, really, at the minute.
What struck me about that and about some of the other things that you've mentioned, the other books that you're reading at the moment, is the child narrator. Because I know, like, Ammaniti often has child-centered narratives. I mean, I read Anna a couple of years ago, and again, that's centered on, you know, adolescence, really. But what is it that draws you to a child narrator in particular? Because I know Lenny's narrator, I think, did Jan Carson say he's going to break your heart? Is that what she said?
Yes, yeah. She did. Yeah.
So and what age is he's 10?
He's 9, turning 10.
10. Okay. And yeah. So what drew you to writing from a child's perspective? And this, like, I don't really want to bring up the devastating news at the moment, but, you know, it was hard to avoid similarities when, you know, reading about Lenny. It's set in Libya, isn't that right? The Second Civil War.
It's set, yeah. So there are two storylines within the novel. One of the storylines is set in 2011 in Libya. During the first Libyan Civil War, and the other storyline is set a year later in Louisiana. But yes, I mean, conflict is one of the themes within the novel. Lenny's father, Jim, has returned from the war, and he is he's pretty broken. And so that was something that I really wanted to look at and explore the impact of conflict on individual lives. Yeah.
And how do you find then writing in a child's voice?
So for me, I mean, I think it's a very important time in our lives, that threshold between childhood and adolescence, and it's a time where you see the world. Not all children do, but where you're hopefully seeing the world through eyes of, you know, openness and optimism, and then there's this sense of greater awareness of what's happening around you, and so the kind of ambivalence that exists within that relationship is something that's very interesting to me in writing. And also because with the book, I mean, this is a story where kind of fantastical things happen, you know. It looks at the nature of time, the nature of reality, how we understand our world. And being able to explore that from a child's perspective was really important.
And did you find it tricky or challenging not to impose an adult's wisdom or an adult's perception onto that voice, to keep it as it would be at that age, questioning and perhaps not with the understanding that you would have later?
It's not something that I kind of consciously thought about. And I think it's something that at the editorial stage, you know, you probably take a look to see, is there anything that doesn't fit within what would be appropriate. But I think that when I write, it's very, very instinctive. And I just, you know, if I feel the character, they take over. And so within the novel, it's Lenny's story. So a lot of the story is from his perspective, but I also really wanted it to be an ensemble piece between the other characters who help him within the novel. And so the story pivots between different voices and different perspectives quite a bit. So in a way, Lenny doesn't have to carry the whole narrative. And he is, after all, that kind of mirror figure of the little prince, you know. So
That's beautiful. Kind of
that conversation with that.
And I see here that, speaking about children, but you're writing two children's novels at the minute, along with a whole raft of other things, by the looks of it. So tell me about that.
I always like to be writing different things and different, you know, different genres, different types of writing. And I think it's, you know, I can't just work on one thing. I would find that very restrictive. The children's books, that's really my daughter is she's 11, and she has been asking me to write her stories for quite a while, so it's those are really for her as much as anything else that I'm in the middle of doing. And one of them, actually, I mean, I won't talk about what they're about or anything, because I can't. When I'm in the middle of writing something, I never do that, because it just kills
it does.
The writing. But one of them was inspired in a way by something in the life of Pablo Neruda.
Intriguing. Very nice. Oh, she'd be so proud. That's a lovely thing to do, and for her to have. And then,
well,
to,
let's see.
Okay, yeah. we'll not jinx it. Yeah, I know that feeling. You don't want to talk about something that you're making, because it just kind of, once you say it out loud, it's almost like it evaporates or something, isn't it? Just
exactly right. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's much, much better just to work on it, do it, and then.
Yeah. And then talk about it. Yeah, sure. But it could be your secret quiet thing until then. I'm going to ask you later to read a little bit from Lenny. But before I ask you to do that, I know that you're not going to leave anything in there to burn. So that's OK. I'm not going to ask you to leave a book in there to burn.
I really couldn't.
people have such different reactions to that question. But you are going to save something that's of value to you that's not a book. So if you could tell me what you would pull from the flames.
Yeah, I think if I was able to save one thing, it would be old family photographs. So I know nowadays everything's on the phone or on the iCloud, but I really love and treasure the old family photographs, so I would keep those.
Okay, so you take your family album out of the house. That's lovely. Laura, I'm going to ask you now, before you read, maybe you've told us a little bit about the novel, but just to kind of remind our listeners of the setting of the book before you start, and then if you'd like to read a little passage for us and tell us what part of the book it's from.
Okay, sure. So Lenny is the story of a 10-year-old boy in Louisiana. He is sleeping rough in the bayou. His family has really fallen apart, and his hometown, Roseville, is under threat of destruction from a sinkhole. And Lenny decides to set out and try and fix things. And the story intertwines with another narrative, which is set in Libya in the desert, and it opens the book with a pilot who falls from the sky and is saved by a young boy in the desert. And the two storylines come together. And really, it's a story about family and love and different ways that we can be kind. But it's also about our planet and how we care for it. Lots of other things as well. So I'll read a little bit from Lenny. This is the beginning of chapter 2. And it's set in False River, Louisiana, in 2012. Lenny slid out of the bald cypress tree, dropping the large cardboard box that swung off the end of his sneakers into the dust below him. Hunkering down beside it, he turned the old Plaquemine orange box over, opening it up, clambering in, ready for flight. His arms were held tense out in front of him as he buried down, his father Jim's pilot cap slipping down low over his eyes as he rocked from side to side. Meow, he tipped a little to the left, steering at a sharp angle. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. He machine-gunned right, one hand pulling back the controls as his plane shot up into the blue, cloudless sky, evading the enemy. Ha, you'll never catch me. He was the king of the sky. Lenny was free, travelling at the speed of light, gone now from the bayou, looking down on the winding silver ribbons and the smiling oxbow gleam of False River, before veering away toward the woodlands further upriver, earth once thick with trees, now yellow and scorched at the edges, dying. A gift to the land, some said, from the chemical companies. Circling back in the other direction, Lenny flew over the twisting branches and early morning mists of the swampland, swiftly and at altitude, eager to be far from where trapped souls lay in wait, mournful and forgotten.
Beautiful. Laura McVeigh, thank you so much.
Thank you, Ruth.
I've been talking with author Laura McVeigh, whose new novel Lenny is published with New Island. Thanks as always to the Arts Council for their support and to you for listening. Join us next time when I'll be talking with Olivia Fitzsimons, author of The Quiet Whispers Never Stop. See you all then.